welcome to the first installment of Music Central on radio.dominican.edu. My name is DJ Wise, and if you don't know about this show already, which I assume you don't, because no one does quite yet, this will be a study of music, Western music in particular, throughout the decades. So every week, we're going to go through a different decade of music, talk about what was going on at that time, talk about the technology, the people that influenced the music, essentially just all the crazy funky stuff you like. I know what you like. You don't need to come and call me ever. I don't know how to work the phone yet, but it's going to be a really fun show. We're going to start this week with the crazy 1930s. The music you just heard, and that's playing in the background, was the infamous Jelly Roll Morton, who started his career probably in the early 1920s. An amazing pianist. But first, I really want to talk about the history of the 1930s. I think that's going to help us sort of understand where the music was coming from. It's gonna basically give us a whole synopsis of why these musicians played the way they did and why music transformed in the way it did in the 1930s to such crazy, fun, outlandish, big music. Big, I can't emphasize enough. But yeah, let's go back to the 1930s. Okay, so in the early 1930s, we had, I'd say, probably the worst economic disaster ever. I think most people would agree with me. If they don't, then they're probably a racist. No, I don't know. But it's probably the worst economic disaster, the Great Depression, 1929, the stock market crashed. This led to hard times for everyone. This wasn't just something that affected a certain race or affected, you know, a certain class even. It was just everyone was going through a certain amount of hardships. And in a sense, that kind of brought people together, struggling all under the same just crazy adversity. Everyone just had just the worst blues, the worst. They weren't jazzed. And I think that's really where music came from, is just that feeling, that need to get away from all this pain and the suffering. And that's really where the 1930s came in musically, was jazz. People needing to get jazzed, man, because that's what life's all about. So last we heard Jelly Roll Morton. If you don't know who Jelly Roll is, you've probably heard of him, but probably one of the most influential jazz artists. He was an eccentric guy. He was a little kind of zany. He didn't quite fit the archetype of your standard, jazz musician. He was a little kind of zany. The 1930s affected him immensely. He was one of those guys that was like pretending everything was cool, but in reality, it couldn't have gone worse for him in the 1930s. But the fact is, he was one of the best artists ever. And regardless of whether or not you think he invented jazz, quote unquote, there's a debate there. He definitely made jazz his own. And the next song I want to play for you is essentially sort of an indication about how he kind of earned his style, where he got his mark. This is from the Library of Congress, 1932. You can just listen to how well he performed, what made him who he is, and you'll kind of hear almost his attitude in this next little segment right here. Enjoy.
Creation of jazz music. In fact, I changed every style to mine.
Well,
All right, that was Jelly Roll Morton with Maple Leaf Rag, one of his most notorious songs that he recorded for Alex Lomax in the Library of Congress. That was an interesting recording for Jelly. He came in, I think, with just studded out, man. He was just pimped out in like diamonds, and he just had the whole outfit and schwang on. I think he was trying to fool everyone, pretending he was fine. But he died a year later, so he wasn't doing that fine. But what he did was he went into the Library of Congress, and he essentially just made a name for himself because he knew something was up. He knew he was at the downfall of his career. So he went in, performed essentially 8 hours of music for Alex Lomax in the Library of Congress, and it still today is probably one of the most notable jazz recordings ever. Just not only for its duration, not only because it just drags on forever and there's Jelly talking about himself and just wild and funky things that probably I can't mention on air, but it's also just really amazing that he still had it even at that like downfall of his life. And then that second song you heard with the brass instruments, essentially the orchestra playing, was Fletcher Henderson. Which if any of you know anything about jazz, which I'm sure all of you do because it's jazz, Fletcher was essentially like, he was the talent agent for jazz musicians back then. He was the guy. If you wanted, you know, Billy Joel whacked, he was the guy to get it done. But he took a Jelly Roll song, King Porter Stomp, and he turned it into something that you could play with an orchestra, which kind of broke barriers, essentially. At that time, that broke the barriers. Everyone stopped. They put down their Lindy Hops, and they pulled their Ford Focuses down, and they said, whoa, this is the guy, and this is the music. And big band music sort of revolutionized from there. And it was also during that time that Fletcher Henderson met a young clarinet player back in the day, who was up and coming. He needed a band to play with. He was trying to create his own band. And Fletcher was like, you know what? I'm going to write some songs for you, and you're going to make it. And that man, that clarinet player, was none other than Benny Goodman. The good man himself, yes, Benny Goodman, who's probably one of the most notorious jazz musicians of all time. He's in movies. He's in everything. Benny Goodman is probably the king of swing, as they put him. Now, what happened was when big band music started to come out, you needed these big orchestras playing, and essentially that's what got people kind of going, was just all these people playing at once. You had solos, not just piano solos, not just one instrument playing, but just like different brass instruments, different, you know, drums, guitars, and it was amazing to hear. And that's really what broke through at that time, was big orchestra, thanks to Fletcher Henderson, inadvertently thanks to Jelly Roll, and then, you know, the song I'm about to play for you by Benny Goodman kind of shows you where music was in the 1930s. Probably one of my favorite songs ever. Sing, Sing, Sing by Benny Goodman. I'm sure you all know it here. Thank you. Whoa. Benny Goodman, you just blew my wig off right there, man. Thank you. Jeez, that was aces. All right, that was Benny Goodman with Sing, 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 the notorious song. I think it was in The Mask. I can't remember. But that's the kind of music we were getting into. Early 1930s, the real deal, King of Swing, Benny Goodman, Gene Krupa on the drums, sort of influenced music right there as well. Essentially, that kind of music broke everything down. Music like Stomping on the Savory, I Got Rhythm, Moonglow, essentially Benny Goodman's whole entire Carnegie Hall album, that was bringing people back from that strong, just hardcore, just depression that was just ruling everyone, because the depression wasn't lifting at that time. Roosevelt really couldn't handle it, and it was becoming something else. And to hear that music at that time, I'm sure, was getting people out of the mud, and it was something that was to help people. And also, it was also breaking segregation barriers, in a sense, for music at least. Benny Goodman, a white guy, who's just, without a doubt, just picking the best musicians for his band, is picking black musicians. And that upset a lot of people at that time. In fact, he couldn't tour in the South at certain times because of Jim Crow laws. And it got to the point where Benny Goodman would openly speak out against racism. And that was the sort of thing breaking barriers. You know, having people like Lionel Hampton in your band and Charlie Christian, made the difference for music, and that's where we needed to be, was breaking barriers like that. And not only was it, you know, breaking down segregation barriers, it was breaking, you know, record barriers. It was topping charts easily. You look up best songs of the 1930s, it's there. Benny Goodman, Sing, 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 Stomping at the Savory, it's all there. But I want to get back into that whole segregation barrier, because it wasn't enough just that, you know, times were difficult for everyone. Everyone was suffering. I think 6 out of every 10 black people were unemployed. It was, everything was plummeting. Everything was hard. And on top of that, segregation and racism was still flourishing in a sense. It was still just downright dirty in the South. And a lot of people, especially with musical power, took that opportunity to talk about it. And one very big example of this can be seen, of course, in Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit. It's one of the most notorious protest songs about lynching. It was actually written by a Jewish writer named Abel Meeropol, and it addresses lynching throughout America. And this was something that was extremely prominent in that time. And for Billie to record this, to do her own adaptation of this in 1939, was extremely significant. And I'm sure it not only upset people, but it also opened people's eyes to something that might not have been aware by many other people. It was so controversial and just so brilliant. But that's what happened. And Billie Holiday herself was an amazing singer. She kind of took it upon herself to start recording these, you know, these solo vocal tracks. And that's kind of, I feel like, where blues really started to. I think Billie Holiday, in a sense, helped blues start. Even though she might be classified as jazz, just her music and her sound is just so much soul and just so much. If you know it, you hear it, it's blues. This is Strange Fruit on Dominican Radio, Musicology. Come back, pull up your pants. We're going to have a great time. Musicology, thanks for listening.
blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south. The bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. Scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter crop.
Welcome back, America. I'm sorry you had to hear that. That might have been a little too sad for you. That was Billie Holiday with Strange Fruit, the infamous song about lynchings in America. It had to be played, you know that. Since we're on the topic of blues, we're talking about depression, we're talking about some adversity here. We all know what that's like. Like, late night Maury show here. I think I want to talk about, you know, the one and only, the blues man himself, where I'm most comfortable talking, probably Robert Johnson. Now, the Mississippi-born blues guitarist, inventor of Delta Blues, probably, I think, Rolling Stone's 100 or number one most influential blues guitarist. This man invented Delta Blues. Whether or not he invented blues or that's debatable. It's like the Jelly Roll Morton thing. But you can't deny that he was a master of blues. And he also brought in vocals, just like Billie Holiday. This is what was happening. People were feeling that, just that strong, just depression, and just it wasn't lifting, and it was all bad, man. And the only one who could really capture it at that time seemed to be Robert Johnson with blues. And I can't give him enough credit for how he influenced almost everyone in rock and roll, from Clapton to Hendrix to Keith Moon. Sorry, he was probably someone who we needed forever. He is the blues man himself, Robert Johnson. Even Obama was singing Robert Johnson. With B.B. King, Buddy Guy, I think Mick was there. They made him sing it. Sweet Home Chicago, that doesn't surprise me. Obama singing Sweet Home Chicago. It surprised me how good of a singer he was. But apparently all African-American people can sing well, from what we've learned here. I'm just kidding. I'm going to get so many calls there. But I want to play Sweet Home Chicago for you. I wish I could play every version of it for you, from Clapton. Even John Mayer's version is good for you. I wish I could do that for you, but I think I'm going to play the original, one and only, Robert Johnson, Sweet Home Chicago.
Oh, baby, don't you want to go? Chicago.
Mr. Robert Johnson, America. Sweet Home Chicago. That was recorded on the Complete Works, Robert Johnson, the Complete Recordings, which he actually, I think, recorded, I think, a year before his death. He died at 27. Late, great Robert Johnson. Just amazing. Can't really argue that. I think probably the biggest thing, though, that came out of Robert Johnson for me was that he was just so unpopular at that time. And that kind of, maybe a little bit unlike Billy, you know, who kind of flourished, you know, all throughout her career, even at a young age. You know, Robert was someone who didn't have success. He, you know, he went to LA, he went to California, and then he moved around. He was a traveling man, but he didn't have the best of success. And I'm sure, you know, he's in heaven, looking down, smiling at all his music, even though, he sold his soul to the devil, apparently, which I'm not completely certain of, but I'm sure, you know, his music is going to get remembered till the end of time. I'm sure everyone's going to still be playing Sweet Home Chicago and Crossroads, and it's going to, blues is going to live on, no matter what. Thank you, Robert Johnson. And the next big man himself, Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, the man who essentially, if you think of a face towards Big Bang music, if you think of a face towards improvisation, it's Louis, without a doubt. If you type in improv on Google, improv jazz, you see Satchmo smiling. It's right there on Google Images. He is, you know, he is the man himself, not only vocally, but he also just improvised with, you know, essentially everything he did. With everything he composed, there was just so much different variety. And people recognize that. Not just in essentially the jazz community. Bing Crosby recognized that when, you know, he was working with Louis on, you know, the set for for Pennies from Heaven, 1936. A lot of famous people recognize Louis as essentially a master of improv, jazz, composing, everything. He talked about some very dark issues as well, but for the most part, a lot of his music is pretty upbeat. He was just a smiling, happy guy. He had big teeth. He was just, you know, probably one of the just most well-respected musicians ever, and there's no arguing that. And he was a funny guy, apparently. On set, he was always probably the guy making jokes, having fun, and he thrived because of that success. Not only his music, but his attitude. He was just Satchmo, and he's someone who we all need to respect and admire. And I want to stop talking because I know you guys want me to stop talking, but I want to play for you All of Me. It's one of the very few recordings that Louis had back in 1930s. He kind of traveled around. Allegedly, he had some issues with the mob. I wouldn't really believe it, but apparently in Louisiana, he had some troubles, and that's what sort of led him to go to Europe, to tour in Europe. And that's kind of something that affected jazz worldwide as well. But I'm going to play for you All of Me right now. We're going to talk more about Satchmo when we get back. Don't go away. Musicology. We got some great music here for you. Don't go away. So I was looking up Louis on Wikipedia because that's what I do in between songs. I was looking up some issues he might have had with race and maybe something that he broke through during that time, like Billy or Benny Goodman. And apparently he was very openly against the Little Rock Nine crisis, or he was against the desegregation, or he was for the desegregation of schools back in that time. And I thought that was kind of interesting, being on Dominican radio, being a comm major, and having Melba, who was one of the Little Rock Nine, Melba Beals, in my department, and she's a part of Little Rock Nine, and I'm playing a Louis song, and that was one of the many issues he was well publicized with. And I'm starting to see a little connection here, and I think I'm going to play more Louis, even though we're sticking to 1930s this week. I think Louis's going to stay strong here, and we're going to keep playing him next week. That's another reason to tune in next week. I'll probably be a little bit more confident here with you, because Louis and just all sorts of music eventually starts to calm me down, and we're going to have some fun here. I would like to play for you, since we're almost out of time, I want to play for you the Duke himself. I don't want to miss this opportunity. There's probably no one else here that I can really save till the end better than Duke Ellington. He is the master composer himself, the pianist. He is the big band leader. He essentially changed music forever. He has countless scores. He's known for just producing and writing just almost just tens, hundreds of just countless standards. And I want to play for you Mood Indigo, which apparently is, not apparently, but is totally one of the best jazz songs, one of the most influential jazz songs in history. Look it up now. Stop listening to my show. No, don't stop listening to my show. Mood Indigo, one of the best songs here for you. I want to play it for you right now. We'll come back. We'll talk about Duke a little bit more. We'll talk about his trips to Europe. Then we'll head out. I'll leave you on one more song, but right now I want to play for you Mood Indigo. Here you go. Duke Ellington, everyone. The one and only Mr. Duke. That was, I think, originally composed back 1931, if I recall. Mood Indigo. Really set the mood for the times. Just kind of laid back, kind of just really sort of just almost really soulful, kind of bluesy. He never actually called the music jazz. He called it American music. But it was jazz, and it was brilliant. I mean, you heard the piano, you heard the orchestra behind him. Everything was so well put together. Everything was so crisp. No matter what time period you live in, this is essentially just amazing music. It's always going to be amazing. It's Duke. And what happened when Duke was sort of touring back in America was he wasn't getting as much success as he did. And he originally traveled to Europe back in 1939. He decided to take a world tour around Europe. And then that's where we started to see jazz pick up in the world. Paris was in love with Duke. Europe in general was just in love with Duke. And I think that kind of makes sense. It's sort of, you kind of see a transition in music at that time everywhere when Duke started to tour Europe. It was becoming accepted everywhere. And next week, we're going to talk about 1940s music. So we're going to go even further into how Europe started to tune into jazz. We're going to talk more into how blues started to pop back up more. And we're going to talk about World War II. We're going to talk about everything that was going on in the 40s, everything big. It's going to be a big week. I want to leave you with one song that's probably my favorite song. Late great artist Django Reinhardt, great gypsy jazz guitarist from Europe who actually loved Louis. He loved Duke. Called Louis his brother, even though he was from Brazil. Inventor of gypsy jazz. We're going to see him a lot more in the 1940s. We're going to see Duke a lot more in the 1940s. And we're going to see a whole bunch of new music, new technology. Tune in next week to Musicology. It's going to be better. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be louder. Here's Minor Swing by Django Reinhardt. Thank you for listening to Musicology, radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Wise.